This is an Area Code podcast.
From three little maids, take one away. Two little maids remain, and they won't have to wait very long, they say. Three little maids from school.
Three little maids from school.
I don't know exactly how the three little maids got their name, but I know it was given to them when they joined WLS. I'm not sure if it was inspired by the song The Three Little Maids from School from Gilbert and Sullivan's The Mikado, which certainly would have been popular enough to be known at the WLS station in Chicago in the early 30s, or if the name comes from the title of the Paul Rubens musical The Three Little Maids, less well known these days, but possibly would have had enough of a cultural relevance then for a Midwestern audience to catch the reference.
I don't believe I'm witty. I can't imagine I'm smart. I'm sure that I'm not pretty, for I know myself by heart. I'm not a wealthy heiress, and I'm not a wealthy princess. So really, I cannot see why I'm glad to be success. But I must have a rather fascinating little way, for they say they can't get on without me. So I'm bound to imagine, though it's not for me to say, there must be something sort of sweet about me.
It may be the name, The Three Little Maids, is not in reference to either, and is simply a descriptor of the three teenage sisters who walked into the WLS studios in 1932. There were three of them. They were little. I guess they were maids. But if we assume that some association would be made, either in naming or in hearing the name, to either the Gilbert and Sullivan or the Rubens productions, there might be some benefit in trying to understand what might be conjured when a WLS listener in the 30s hears the name Three Little Maids. Gilbert and Sullivan fans would place the title in the context of a comedic opera set in Japan in a society that had made flirting punishable by death. One of these three little maids in the song is the lead character, who is constrained by this rule. A restrictive society built around sexual propriety. And in some ways, the opera is a study of how the characters negotiate sexuality within that society. Rubens fans would understand the three little maids to be simple country girls, daughter of a clergyman, who moved to the big city, finding themselves in romantic competition with the women of the social elite. Through natural charm, the three little maids win the affection of the society men at the defeat of the society women. A clash of sexual mores between the rural and the urban, with the rural in the end having the upper hand. Any way we cut it, we're looking at the lines that define virtue, and whenever virtue is defined, of course, we're looking at the ways virtues are upheld and transgressed. Who are the goody-goodies, who are the hypocrites, and who are the rebels? We'll see these sexual dynamics at play in the story of the Overstake sisters, the three little maids, in their time at WLS. Not that each sister falls neatly into any one category, more that we'll look at the sexual mores that guide the national barn dance, and how these mores interact with the rise in the careers of Evelyn, Lucille, and Eva Overstake. Maybe The Three Little Maids is a lazy name, but it leads us to some interesting places, as we start with the eldest of the Overstake sisters, Evelyn, on this first of three episodes on The Three Little Maids. Welcome to Wildwood Flower, Stories of Women Who Built Country Music. I'm your host, Jack Peterson, a lifelong music fan and country music outsider, trying to embrace a genre I've always held at a distance. Before we start, a little bit about my research for this episode. There's one book that I wasn't able to get, and it will haunt me for the rest of my life. The book is Many Tears Ago, The Life and Times of Jenny Lou Carson, or as we will know her in this episode, Lucille Overstake. The book is long out of print and was difficult for me to find, even with the force of a university library behind me. I've read about this book, and it's not considered authoritative, maybe skewing salacious. It may be trash, but still, I'd love to read it. If you know where to get this book, or have this book, or if you have an aunt with a bunch of unauthorized biographies of forgotten stars in her attic, please get in touch with me. I really don't think it would have added much to the episode today, maybe a little more context, maybe a better understanding of the dynamic between these three sisters, Evelyn, Lucille, and Eva. I won't know until I read it, but if I do manage to find a copy, I'll make a companion episode to this one about the contents of the book. Alright, the Overstake sisters are all born in Decatur, Illinois. Evelyn, the eldest, is born on December 20th, 1913. Virginia Lucille, January 13, 1915, and Eva, July 23, 1917. Just over a year difference between the eldest sisters, Evelyn and Lucille, and just under four separating Evelyn and Eva. They are the eldest of six children born to Helen Elizabeth Nalewski and Herschel Jewel Overstake. The Overstake household was strict and somewhat competitive at the design of the father, Herschel, and as a result of both parents being heavily involved with the Salvation Army. Herschel also ran a gas station and an ice cream fountain adjacent to the Overstake home. Their mother Helen would often sing to them and play piano for them as children, and Evelyn cites this as a formative musical influence. It's at the Salvation Army meetings that the Overstake sisters got their start in music. Around 1920, with Evelyn around 9 and Eva around 5, Evelyn remembers being in Lincoln Square in downtown Decatur. And after the Salvation Army band played, someone laid down a big bass drum, and the three little girls got up to sing. People would place money on the drum after they sang. Evelyn remembers, "Our mother told us to smile, open our mouths wide, and let it all hang out." It's through these Salvation Army events, political gatherings, and through school functions around Decatur that the Overstake sisters developed their vocal harmonies that would become their trademark on the barn dance. As a child, Evelyn was always mature for her age. Here's how she puts it in an article written in 1937 about her housekeeping routines. She says, "I just always loved children, and all the children in the neighborhood ran to meet me when I came home from school. I was very old for my age and quite serious when a child. When I was only 12 years old, I stayed alone all night with a tiny baby." In some ways, it seems like this maturity is a product of her being the eldest of six, but also in her having to take on domestic duties as a child due to her father's poor health. She says that she had been keeping house since age 11. Quote, "Dad has always been a semi-invalid, so Mother had to work away from home. Being the oldest of three children, I did practically all the cooking and housekeeping for the family. To this day," this is in 1937, "I love to cook and clean. I used to mop the floors from top to bottom of the house every Saturday, even when I was only 12 years old. I wouldn't let the girls help very much. They were in my way." Unquote. She goes on to say, "Lucille and Eva don't care as much about housekeeping as I do. As the girls got older, Evelyn, around 16, and Lucille at 14, formed a duet. Lucille taught herself to play guitar, and she became the accompanist for the group. Their younger sister Eva soon joined them, and their rise in popularity around Decatur led to radio appearances at regional radio stations WJBL, WDZ, and WTAX. Evelyn says, "My voice was the lowest, Lucille's was the highest, and Eva did the yodeling. Our voices blended together beautifully. One early influence of the group was the Brock Sisters, another sister trio harmony group that had some success in the mid-1920s. Some early Salvation Army numbers from the girls' repertoire are Down by the Old Rustic Well and I Ain't Gonna Study War No More. Herschel, the father, became the girls' manager and, seeing their success on local radio, decided to bring them, ages 18, 16, and 14, to WLS to audition in late summer, early fall 1931. It only took one audition for the radio station to hire them. The station director at the time was so impressed, he put the girls as guest performers on the National Barn Dance the following Saturday, and soon they were hired for regular Saturday night barn dance appearances. By early 1932, the entire family moved to Chicago, and the Three Little Maids were off and running, even earning their own radio show. Just to put things in a bit of context here, we know that the Overstake sisters were young in 1932. 19, 17, and 15, thereabouts. Our last episodes were about Lulu Bell, who would have been 19 as well in 1932, Linda Parker, who would have turned 20, and Grace Wilson in her second career, who would have been 42, which is a fine age if you ask me. By all accounts, these are young adults and teenagers, and despite the wholesome facade that the barn dance put forth to its audience, things were not so straight-laced behind the scenes. Lulu Bell commented, for example, "Oh, they were all screwing each other left and right over there. You didn't dare bend over. One thing I didn't like about the barn dance, all the fellows and these men on the show were trying to get around you. You know, young girl, free, trying to get you somewhere in a bed." More on this later, but just remember, these women were young. The Three Little Maids' entrance into the barn dance coincided with the barn dance beginning their live stage shows at the 8th Street Theater. I don't know if this was exactly their costume, but one early picture of the Three Little Maids has them dressed in something like a Dutch milkmaid kind of costume. Other pictures have them wearing something more like the gingham dresses that other barn dance stars wore. As for the repertoire, the Three Little Maids leaned heavily into their background of the Salvation Army, performing and recording some more gospel-tinged numbers. One song that harkens to their Salvation Army performance days, I Ain't Gonna Study War No More, recorded in April 1933 for the American Recording Company. Hear Them Bells is another track at this time that has ties to their Salvation Army singing days. The Three Little Maids also recorded sentimental ballads, much like Grace Wilson and Linda Parker. Here's Since the Angels Took My Mother Away.
Since the angels took mother away, the skies seem cloudy and gray. I'm thinking about
tears in my eyes, she's joined the angels in heaven.
also recorded John Lehrer-style nostalgia songs about Kentucky, like this song with the most cumbersome title to date for this podcast. It's just a tumble-down shack, parentheses, but I'd like to go back to my old Kentucky home, close parentheses.
It's just a tumble-down shack, but I'd like to go back to my Kentucky home.
In this recording, we hear Evelyn with the low alto. Lucille with the guitar accompaniment.
I'd like to have my mother take me in her arms again and softly sing to me this sweet refrain.
And Eva with the yodeling.
Go to sleep, my old lady, in my Kentucky.
This is the basic composition of the Three Little Maids recordings. By far the most common descriptor used by WLS to describe the music of the Three Little Maids is sweet. The Three Little Maids only recorded 8 sides for labels, but they did make a series of radio transcriptions. I'm not entirely sure of the date of these radio transcriptions, but we can see that the trio began incorporating more Western themes in their music, perhaps inspired by Barn Dance castmates Patsy Montana, the Girls of the Golden West, and Louise Massey. Here are a few examples.
I'm just a cowgirl riding the range. I'm wild and I'm woolly and don't want to change. I follow the cattle so wild and so free. I'm always singing ti-yippee-ti-yee. I roodle-dee-doodle-dee-roodle-dee-dee. Ti-yippee-ti-yippee-ti-yee. I follow the cattle so wild and so free. I'm always singing ti-yippee-ti-yee.
The reason I can't pinpoint when these transcriptions were made is that the Three Little Maids as an act was short-lived. The group disbanded in 1933, just 1 year after joining WLS. It's possible that the three got back together to record some transcriptions after this, but I haven't found much evidence of this in my research. Why did they break up? The youngest, now 16-year-old Eva, married Red Foley, 7 years her senior. Lots more to this story in the Eva episode, but it's enough to say here that once Eva was pregnant, the group could not continue. Remember from part one of the Lulu Bell episode that Eva and Red's marriage also broke up the Lulu Bell and Burrhead act. Evelyn and Lucille tried to make it work as a duo, the two little maids, but that didn't last either, and as Evelyn says, Lou went her own way. We'll pick up Lucille's story here in the next episode as she transforms herself into the legendary country songwriter Jenny Lou Carson. But for now, Evelyn is left behind. Nevertheless, she rises to the challenge of being a solo act and becomes known as, probably unsurprisingly, the Little Maid. Here's what she says about this transition. We had sung together ever since we were kids, and as a matter of fact, none of us ever sang alone. Consequently, when I first faced the mic alone to do a solo last year, I was scared pink. And that was after 4 years in radio. She's not kidding about never having performed alone. She retells a time from her childhood when a teacher asked her to sing an alto part in front of the class. She tried, and by her account was failing, until Lucille joined her and all went well from that point. She says, "I thought of that day in school last year when I sang alone on air for the first time, and it took me a number of weeks to lose my fear in solo work." Even though the Three Little Maids were drifting into Western-themed music, Evelyn and her solo work returned to sentimental ballads. She says, "I enjoy singing more than anything else, and I always favor the old-time music because of the sweet melody and tender sentiments in the back of those good old-fashioned songs." Despite her initial fear, Evelyn becomes beloved at the barn dance, again being described as sweet. Stand By magazine tracks a good bit of Evelyn throughout its run. We get details on everything from what she does in her spare time. She says, "During my spare time, I like to swim, golf, bowl, and dance, and I'm fond of cooking and planning meals, too." For a period, she and Lulu Bell and other barn dance stars took up roller skating in between shows. Her favorite song in 1937 was "Ah, Sweet Mysteries of Life."
Yes, yes, I will sing. I will. Rodolfo, Rodolfo, play. Play a song, my song.
Si, si, bella mia.
She could go anywhere for vacation, she would go to the Rockies in Colorado. And her pet peeve is crooked seams in her stockings. There's even a piece that reveals what type of pajamas the women of the barn dance wear at night. Weird, I know. The piece is from November 1935 and is called "When the Stars Stay In at Night." Here's how it goes. "When the red filaments of the great transmitting tubes grow cold, when the brightly lighted studios become dim, do you wonder what your favorite stars are doing? Where they have gone, and what they do when they do nothing? What they wear when they're doing it? We were curious. We went on a cruise around the station. We checked up on the private, intimate hours of our WLS women. Here's what we found out." They go through a few different personalities, and they finally get to Evelyn. For Evelyn Overstake, it says, "Being dark, wears red satin pajamas when she lounges. The jacket is happily made of black velvet. It's knee length, has two pockets, no buttons, full length sleeves with red satin cuffs and red satin lapels." Kind of sounds like something Jessica Dragonette might wear. I get a kick out of what this article says about another cast member named Hazel Dofide. Hazel Dofide, otherwise the lovable Ma Smithers, doesn't look exactly the part of a sedate old lady when she's wearing her red silk trousers with cream-colored tops. This top has, listen to this, a peacock in red and black appliqued to the front. Stand By has a feature on Evelyn for a section of the magazine on housekeeping, where Evelyn discusses how she tidies her home and what her favorite recipes are. The article says, "Evelyn is doing less housekeeping now than she ever has since she started as a child. Living in an apartment, illness, a housekeeper, rehearsals, and 6 radio programs each week combined are reason enough for this. However, Evelyn still does the managing, plans the menus, and usually prepares the Sunday meals so as to give her housekeeper some free time. From the menu she reeled off as her favorite for Sunday, I think I might like to drop in some Sunday about dinner time. Here's her menu. Shrimp cocktail, beef pot roast with onions, carrots, and potatoes, asparagus and chopped lettuce and tomato aspic, hot biscuits, fresh fruit parfait, coffee. Standby even has a handwriting specialist analyze Barn Dance star's signatures. Of Evelyn, the analyst says, "Our little maid, Evelyn, has a very interesting character as revealed from her writing. She has a grand imagination, a vivid personality. She is a person always full of pep, life, and smiles. A very lovely dancer. Her feelings are easily hurt. She has strong willpower and a determination that nothing can daunt. She is too generous for her own good. She forms her likes and dislikes almost instantly. She hides her feelings well and makes her a true trooper. She is sincere and honest. Rhythm, time, and melody fairly radiate in her writing. Her character is as fine as her voice is sweet. I could tell you much more, but space will not permit. And so, until next week, so long and good luck." Evelyn married D.R. Bechtel of Chicago in the early 30s, apparently before starting at the Barn Dance. I don't know the details, but the marriage ended in an early divorce, but not before the couple had had a son, Neil Eugene Bechtel. Neil is prominently featured in Stand By, since it seems that the Barn Dance audience really enjoyed seeing the children of stars and even baby pictures of the stars themselves. Evelyn says, "My little boy always listens. He knows when I'm singing a song especially for him, and he's always delighted. That little boy of mine, I sing for Neil, and all sweetheart songs I sing for him." In caring for Neil, Evelyn reflected on her own child, saying, "But now that I'm older and realize what I missed as a child, I'm learning to play, and I'm teaching Neil to play with me. To Neil, I am almost always sweetheart. Very seldom does he call me mother." Evelyn had a spate of serious health issues in 1935 and 36. Standby reports on 2 occasions of her hospitalization, first after collapsing at a performance in Toledo, after which she needed emergency surgery and could not return to Chicago for several weeks during her recuperation. After this first health scare, Evelyn began volunteering at local hospitals. She says, "We do visit hospitals frequently, though. You know, veterans' hospitals or those for crippled children, where we can sometimes cheer them up with our songs and acts. These folks are appreciative audiences, and I enjoy singing for them in between our regular shows, whenever our schedule allows it." The April of 1936 Standby reports, "We're glad to say that Evelyn Overstake, the little maid, is recovering from a major operation at the Presbyterian Hospital here in Chicago." The next month, Herschel Overstake, the sister's father, passes away at 42. In October of 36, Standby reports, "Evelyn Overstake, the little maid, has been seriously ill for several weeks and confined to the Washington Boulevard Hospital in Chicago. Although still unable to be up and around, she is much better and has returned home from the hospital. We hope we can report an even greater improvement in Evelyn's condition by this time next week." A month later, the magazine says, "Evelyn Overstake is up and around again after a long illness." Evelyn stayed with the Barn Dance 20 years in all, part of that time backed by the Hilltoppers. She had another show with a nautical theme, Dreamer's Bay with Captain Evelyn, where she was known as the captain of Dreamer's Bay on the Good Ship Melody. Here's how some fans described her. "Just want to say how glad I am that Evelyn, the little maid, has an evening program. I think she's just swell. She has a beautiful voice that is so sweet and clear. A short time ago, I had the pleasure of meeting her, so now I know she's just as swell as she sounds on the air." Miss Lucille XL, Rockford, Illinois. Mrs. L. Job of Michigan City, Indiana, 1 week later, had to reply. "Miss XL wrote how swell she thinks Evelyn is. Swell doesn't express my feeling. It would take a bigger word than that. I wish she had 2 evening programs instead of 1. I never miss one of her programs. I've met her personally, and she's just as lovable to know as to hear. Without her sisters, who found firm footing in the canon of country music, Evelyn did not make a significant impact on country, staying mostly in the sentimental ballad lane, being accompanied by an organist at times even. Always put together, she was said to don her pert walking shoes to do her show each week. Always positive, she dropped nuggets of optimistic philosophy in her programs, like A Musical Journey with Miss Evelyn, which had the theme song, Just a Street Where Old Friends Meet, a song which would make Evelyn think of her hometown, Decatur, Illinois. With love in my heart, I thought about Decatur when I sang that song. Lucille and Eva both came back to the barn dance at various times, and the three of them even reunited as the Three Little Maids in 1938 for at least one radio performance. Once, while Evelyn was out for a week, her sister Lucille filled in for her on the radio program. Here's what one listener had to say about that. Just a word to tell you how much I enjoyed Lucille Overstake's solo during a recent WLS on Parade program. As far as I'm concerned, Lucille needn't wait for Evelyn to be absent before she sings by herself again. From now on, she's tops with me. A Lucille fan, Rossville, Illinois. Well, this didn't sit well with the Evelyn fans. A couple weeks later, someone wrote, "Are we indignant at the Lucille fan from Rossville, Illinois, who intimated that Lucille was a better singer than Evelyn? I've read every issue of Stand By for over 2 years, and this is the first time I've ever seen a word other than praise for our own little maid. Well, just give us and 50 million others sweet, soft voice Evelyn, and give Lucille fans Lucille, the Stamp family, all 13 of us, Crown Point, Indiana." The Lucille fan had to write back. In regard to the indignant Evelyn fan from Crown Point, Indiana, I did not say a word in my letter against sweet little Evelyn, for I've stayed up after the rest of my family retired for the night to hear her sweet voice in her Thursday night programs in the past. But I know Evelyn is proud to know we like to hear Lucille too. I, for one, have more than one favorite and would never have anything but praise for good old WLS. Everyone there is just swell. Evelyn remained steady at the barn dance while her sisters moved here and there. Tragically, Eva committed suicide in 1951, the details of which we'll discuss in a couple of episodes. Lucille moved around quite a bit, eventually settling in California after being diagnosed with emphysema. Evelyn, always the caretaker, retired from the barn dance and moved to California to be with Lucille, who lived a reclusive life there until her death. At one point in her life, Evelyn's chief ambition was to have a colonial home near the mountains, where she could take long hikes in the woods, have a spacious living room, a massive fireplace, and a large backyard garden. I don't know if Evelyn ever got her home near the mountains, but she did get a backyard garden. In a newspaper interview in 1988, Evelyn reflects on her days with her sisters at the barn dance and describes her current lifestyle. Since moving to California, Evelyn married again, but rarely sang, except sometimes to her friends, but never in public. She says, "I miss it. I wish I had kept it up. My hobby is now trees and plants, so I sing to them. They answer beautifully by blooming away." Evelyn died in April 2002 at age 89. Evelyn Overstake, the constant, the center, the optimist, maybe risk-averse, not showy, steady, professional, dedicated her life to song and caring for those she loved. Her life choices will be understood a bit better as we look at her sister's less stable lives in the next two episodes, starting with the groundbreaking middle child, Lucille, also known professionally as Jenny Lou Carson. Even if you are underwhelmed by Evelyn's life story, you'll be glad you listened when you hear the Jenny Lou Carson and Eva Overstake episodes. Thank you for listening. Ways to support women in music, ways to support me are in the show description. References for this episode are in the show description, as is a song list. We're making our way through the 30s, through the lens of the women of the National Barn Dance. You don't want to miss the next episode. Lots to learn and lots to love about Jenny Lou Carson.
I'm heading for the ravine to my cabin in love.
just to be again in the Rockies.